the Gaming Guru Podcast. He's in the best gaming podcast in the world. Guru Baby.
It's a brand new week, and of course, another excuse to talk about gaming, like we need one, is that BlizzCon just completed. Did you check out much of it, Tim?
I did. I was quite enthralled by all the Diablo 4 announcements, so I feel like I blocked out almost everything else that came out of BlizzCon. That was like the only thing that like slapped me right in the face, and I was transfixed.
Yeah, I mean, I must have watched that trailer. Jeez. About four times myself, and then I watched it with my wife like another three times. And the problem is, it's like there's so much hype, and you're like, no release date. And you know, the way Blizzard works, it's like even when the release date's announced, it's normally like a year away. So yeah. That means we're at least, geez, I want to say 12 to 18 months away from seeing it, you know, playable at least.
Yeah. So with their announcement, they also said that it's, they said it's not soon, not even Blizzard soon. And Blizzard soon could be like a two-year time period. Yeah, a year to 2 years. I think so here was my experience, right? I saw the cinematic. It was incredible, as Blizzard cinematics usually are. And then I saw the gameplay trailer, and I was like, oh my God, D4, woo. It was like everything that I wanted out of BlizzCon like 2018.
Last year.
Exactly. Like I'm getting it now. But like after watching it a couple times, and the sparkles like kind of dissipate, you kind of start to see it for what it is. It's not as shiny as I would like it to be. I'm looking at this gameplay trailer, and I'm thinking this is like maybe 3 years away. This is like 2022, 23 even maybe. This is some like really good looking alpha gameplay, and I think the game still has a long way to go.
It said that they had it playable for everyone on the show floor. Yeah, only 3 minutes. Yeah. So it was kind of like, okay, how deep under the armor or the paint can you scratch within 3 minutes? Yeah. But it's, you know, if it's playable, you want to say that like there must be something, unless it's just a pure fact of the case that they've only got max 5 minutes of content out there, you know? And so, you know, if you think how big those games are content wise, that the next couple of years is really just like, you know, the mechanics are there, but now it's like the level design. Obviously, they want to add more than just the three characters that are there. Maybe let's just do a recap of what we do know for people who, you know, maybe this is the first they've heard of Diablo 4 being announced.
Yeah, so look, I think it's this Diablo 4 announcement feels to me kind of like it's more of a reactive approach coming from Blizzard rather than a proactive one, because they could have announced something last year. We got the Diablo Immortal thing, and they were like, yeah, people are going to love this. And then people didn't love it. They're like, oh, shit. And, you know, they had to, like, recollect, you know, get their shit together for this year. I feel like this playable demo, they just kind of put it together for BlizzCon. I don't believe that the game was actually in a playable state. I mean, it's definitely in alpha testing. But I think they put something together for BlizzCon. They wanted to show us more than we thought we were going to get, if that makes sense. Okay. Like last year, a trailer would have been cool. This year, they're like, we can't just show a trailer. We have to show them a trailer and gameplay. They have to see this game
happening. Yeah, because you want to catch up a year.
Yeah. Well, exactly. So, where do we start? I guess Diablo 4. Okay, look.
We know the main protagonist is going to be, or antagonist is going to be Lilith.
Yeah. Supposedly the creator of Sanctuary.
Yeah.
Sanctuary, if I'm not mistaken, is that the...
That's the world that we're playing on. Yeah. When we're not in heaven or hell, that's the kind of like the human realm.
Yes.
And so, go ahead.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't really know that much about this protagonist. I really liked her, the cinematic sort of entrance that she got. It was really dark, occult. It feels like this game's going back to the roots of kind of the let's say the personality of those Diablo games when they were kind of first and foremost horror genre ARPGs, right? They're like genre defining games. And I feel like if D4 really picks up and gets quite popular, D3 might just like disappear into history and no one will ever like speak about it again.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's definitely a return, it seems at least, style-wise, to like more of a horror genre. What struck me just watching the gameplay is also way bleaker. If you think of like D3, one of the major complaints, if you want to call it that, was that, it looks too colorful and it's too happy. And at the time, I was just like, oh, God, you guys will find something to complain about anything. And looking at now, the Diablo 4 art style seems to go back to a much more muted kind of almost Bloodborne-esque kind of color palette, where it's just like it's bleak and it's gray and it looks like the world's as oppressive as any of the bosses. I think feature-wise, one of the things I'm excited to see is how they turn out this whole open world thing. Because it's supposed to be open world in the kind of like hub areas and some of the kind of transition areas. And then the dungeons will instance for your party. So, obviously, if you're playing solo or up to four in a party, those dungeons will be just for you. And so there won't be other characters kind of stealing your loot and killing your monsters and taking your EXP. But when you're in the kind of open world areas, you'll interact with hundreds of other players. And it's because there will be world events that everyone will be able to interact with. What those world events are, we don't know. It might be, giant bosses or, cataclysmic kind of, continental.
Cataclysm is a dirty word now, dude.
Yeah, fair enough. but in the sense of going, there might be a meteor that strikes or, it's Halloween, so there's like festivities and whatever and that everyone can interact with. So I'm excited to see how that plays out. It also, I suppose, will make a legitimate reason why it should be always online, because I've always felt in Diablo 3 is like, you forced us to be online, but I can't see why. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know why we were always online, because half the issues in the beginning of the game were, remember, server logon issues and...
Yeah,
so I'm excited to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I'm hyped about the open world elements. I think the social elements of the game are going to be quite important, particularly because of its release date. I think like at that point we'll be like sort of a year into like next gen.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
We're looking. Yeah, so and this is the thing that kind of worries me slightly, right? So people thought that D3 was a bit too colorful, a bit too. The actual word was like cartoonish, I think.
Yeah.
Because the game director who took over and worked on D3 was the same game director who worked on World of Warcraft. So it does tend to lean towards that type of sort of art style. And it does get a bit like a bit cartoony, a bit flowery. Now, they did kind of tone it down a lot for this reveal trailer. I think that the textures and color palettes look quite muddy, but because of the phase that I think the development is in, I think a lot more is going to happen. I think I like some of the
polish is still coming. Yeah,
polish is still coming. I like some of the animations. The combat looks really cool. I liked that we saw some of the classic character classes coming back. Sork, Druid, Barb. I think that that each character is going to have like a very unique type of play style. So. In some of the streams that I watched, you saw, let's say, the Barbarian would have like four weapon slots and he'd have four weapons on him constantly. And when you use certain attacks, you'll pull out certain weapons for those attacks. And you gain the benefits from holstered weapons even. So like if you got like, +3 fire damage on an axe that's on your belt, you'll always have that +3 fire damage. You can still do the gender choosing, which is really cool. I really like that element of D3. I think they want to put a lot of build-defining functionality into legendary and unique items. The talent tree does not seem inspiring to me. I took a look at the talent tree, and it was a lot of like +2% move speed, +3% damage. And like further down to like the higher tier talent, it's like 40% extra bleed damage. And I'm like,
new skills and abilities.
I want talent trees to feel like it's build defining, like you're making a choice because you want to play a build that functions like this. But I'm wondering if they're going to put those kinds of build defining decision making choices, like into the item loadouts that you choose, because sets are back. And this is the thing, I found sets very boring, because it's like, you want to play this build, then you better go get that set and equip the whole set, and now are that build. And I've always found it boring. I think there are way more interesting ways to approach build diversity, and I think that's something that Blizzard needs to kind of sit down and focus on, like this team, because by the time this game comes out, we'll already have had Path of Exile 4.0 for about a good year. And that's supposed to be like the big mega update. And the last time Path of Exile had a mega update, they added 5 new acts. They doubled the size of their game.
Basically a brand new game, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there's at this time also Lost Ark will be out, which is also kind of filling that same sort of gap of ARPG, open world, sort of MMO type vibe. Thing. So there's a lot of competition in this space. I also worry that the graphics might be a bit outdated for next gen. I don't know. I feel like the game still needs a lot of work, and like people are feeling the hype train because we've been waiting for an announcement like this for a long time, and we kind of like got blue balls last year when it was, you know, when it was held back from us. Other things that I noticed, combat UI looks quite clean. It looks very console friendly, which is cool because they are pitching this on consoles as well.
Yeah, they didn't mention if it would be all consoles from launch or if it's going to be a case of just like last time, PC, then console, then Switch. You know, so it'll be interesting to see, given, especially as you said, we are more than likely going to have a PS5 and an Xbox 2 out, but which seems like a weird name, but it's unlikely we'll have a Switch replacement yet. Because Switch, let's be honest, Nintendo have never been one of those to keep up with the Joneses from a hardware perspective. You know, in terms of like, they have updated their GPUs and all that. We better come up with a Switch Pro or whatever. They're not the types. So, you know, I don't know if next year, because there haven't been rumors of a new Nintendo console. And it's a bit early in its life cycle. I think it's only 2 years in now, approaching its third year, where the others have done the standard 5-year life cycle by the time it's the end of next year. You know, having both launched, 2015?
Yeah, so gameplay looks a bit slow, but I'm actually okay with that. What's been happening over the years in Path of Exile is that everything's just gotten faster and faster and faster, and it's like the zoom, zoom, gotta go fast type play style. Because the faster you clear, the more shit you drop and the more stuff you get. So but if you can like clear a map,
Yeah, but I mean, as you say that, we would have seen... It looked like kind of early to mid game based on how far they were on their skill trees. And so like the zooming around tends to happen, once you are a much higher level character because you're like, you know, running through stages you've seen before.
Yeah.
But also the fact that like these guys are playing levels that they've never seen before. And so they are kind of analyzing the characters and the place.
I mean, I'm talking about like the speed at which these the attack animations happen, the spells happen, the speed at which these enemies are moving towards you. Granted, this is probably like early game stuff, and in early game, like you won't find, you know, some of those high tier dangerous enemies. Yeah. So that's just something that I wanted to look out for.
Mounts, I mean, remember when you play Diablo for a second or third time with the same character, you know, even if you increase the difficulty, the first levels are still so slow. Yeah. It's like running around looking for a zombie to kill.
So the one thing that's that I feel might be problematic is the PvP elements. So I played a bit of PvP in Diablo 2 back in the day when I was a kiddo, and I really dug it. And I did a bit of PvP in Path of Exile, but ultimately what happens is balancing PvP and PvE at the same time is very difficult. And it can become like a resource sink because you got to like dedicate a team to doing that. And it can sort of hinder the base experience. We know that this the Diablo sort of office does have a lot of resources coming from Blizzard, but they've got a lot that they're working on. They're not just optimizing this game for console, they're optimizing it for PC as well. So you already have like two different dev teams kind of optimizing different places. Now you want to throw more resources into balancing PvE and PvE like at the same time. I feel like they're trying to like go for a jack of all trades, but not really. They're trying to give us everything, but I feel like it could become problematic.
Yeah, but hasn't that been just, kind of
more margin what, for error?
Hasn't that been what Blizzard has always kind of prided itself on? Is that like it's not the highest kind of most niche games, you know, like if you take like their MMO, World of Warcraft, it's one of the most accessible, it's one of the most open to new players compared to, you know, some guys might say MMOs are still really difficult for new players to jump in when everyone else is running in level hundreds and that, but it's more accessible than most MMOs. Their card game, Hearthstone, is one of the most accessible card games, you know, like even StarCraft, online is brutal when you play against other players, but as an RTS, when you're playing the single player campaign, it's pretty accessible. I think they've always tried to be the more accessible version. I think that's the one critique people have had of, like, you know, you're looking at Path coming to your Diablo and going, oh, it looks a bit simple. A lot of people like look at the skill tree of Path and go, what the fuck am I looking at?
Yeah.
Because it's super technical. But for someone who wants a high skill cap, I think that's where Path has always succeeded, is going like, yeah, cool, this is for high end hack and slash RPG guys. They want a, you know, a really, really specialized experience. Whereas Diablo goes, hey, you want to try click some buttons? And then I think that's why you chat anecdotally to people who go, yeah, it's the one game that like my wife will play, or I can play with my girlfriend, or you know, whatever. Like my friend who doesn't even play these sort of RPGs loves Diablo because it's simple. It's like,
yeah,
you know, run around, hack things, pick shit, shiny things up.
And that's why I guess Diablo 2 was so revolutionary, right? Yeah. Because it had this like live arcade, like hack and slash feel to it, and you can just plug and play. You go, and as soon as you upgrade like one skill in the talent tree, like everything changes, and you're like, whoa, this is cool. You know, you don't even have to think about it. Like, I'm going to choose this now and see what happens. And I think that was a big part of the appeal for the game and why it was so popular and people still play it today. But for Diablo 4, I had a lot of hype the other morning when I watched all these things, but I'm still reserving a good deal of my hype because, I don't know, Blizzard need to prove it to me. They need to. I want to see the game. I want to play the game.
Yeah. And well, don't get me wrong. Like, I will still play the game. Like,
yeah. So I'm reserving a good deal of my hype for when we have the game in hand.
Yeah, so you haven't bought the full luxury pass on the hype train. You're sitting there in coach economy class.
Yeah,
like latched onto the side.
I'm checking the live tweets from the hype train, and I'm making my mind up based on that.
100%. Well, I mean, let's talk a little bit about some of the other stuff that happened at BlizzCon. Overwatch 2 was also one of the worst kept secrets on Reddit. Everyone had been speaking about that forever. And it's interesting because I think it finally speaks to how Blizzard planned to keep making money from Overwatch. Because when they announced that it was basically you get everything for free, including like a reasonably decent amount of loot drops, you just have to buy the base game, you kind of wonder, geez, how are they going to continue to basically pay for all the expansions and new heroes and all that sort of stuff with a once-off purchase, you know, if you compare it to other games as a service, which you want to say Overwatch is really, it's a game as a service, but with a once-off purchase price, you get continuous content, which is essentially paid for by the loot that, you know, you can get, but you grind seriously hard for, whereas like the loot drop instances are pretty regular in Overwatch. So now that they've announced an Overwatch 2, you see that that's just how it's going to be. It feels like it's going to be this iterative. What Overwatch feels like, it's been out for about 3, maybe 4 years. So there's going to be a Overwatch 3, Overwatch 4, whatever, most likely every couple of years to fund that research cycle.
Got you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right.
Yeah. I mean, because you've got to be honest, like they do need to keep making money for the game to remain balanced and, you know, new content to come out. That's always been my struggle with like Diablo 3, is going, geez, they put a lot of resources and stuff into this game, which came out, what, 2012. Came out in 2012.
Yeah.
Remember May of 2012. And so it's like they've been putting 7 years worth of content into a game, which, I mean, let's be honest, like you bought once. 7 years ago. So, yeah. You know, like, I do respect the fact that, like, they do need to start making money from it again. And so what we do know about Overwatch 2 is that there will be a single-player campaign. And it sounds like a lot of it came from feedback where guys were going, the story of Overwatch doesn't happen in the game. So they were releasing comics. They're releasing those, like, short cinematics every time there's a hero.
Yeah.
But it's one of those, like, for a lot of people, you're playing this game and the characters all have these, like, seemingly rich backstories, but you're like, you don't have a clue what they are just by playing the game. You've got to consume all that extra stuff. So they're going, okay, cool, let's tackle that by having a kind of single-player campaign mode so you get to know the characters' stories. And which, yeah, it's an interesting play. I'm quite keen to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I know, me too. Look, I think people also underestimate. I mean, like, you think about how many copies of this game Blizzard has sold. Yeah. It makes a huge difference. I have no doubt that I don't think their dev team is, like, short of resources or cash.
No,
any stretch of the means. I mean, it was the Overwatch loot box that brought loot boxes to the fore. So, yeah. I mean, they've been doing this for a while. They've figured out ways to monetize their game. I don't think Blizzard mentioned anything about how they were going to sort of future monetize Diablo 4. And they didn't really mention anything about microtransactions and monetization in Overwatch 2, did they?
No, not that I saw.
Okay. But I think it would stand to reason they'd have things like the Battle Pass is becoming quite a popular financial model now, particularly more favorable given that loot boxes have really kind of fallen out, not just with developers, but with audiences. So yeah. It's just become like a toxic thing.
I still have my theories on loot boxes in terms of we like to complain, but are our wallets doing the same thing? Because there has to be data that keeps these companies bringing out loot boxes. And, yeah. You know, I don't know the data, but I'm just speculating that it might be one of those things where you go, the outcry and the gut feel is that, like, everybody hates loot boxes. But, you know, if someone had to present the numbers going, here are purchases of loot boxes versus games that don't have it. And you go, wow, everyone's bitching about it, but their wallets are going, yeah, loot boxes, let's buy this stuff. Because what's a $1 transaction 100 times? Like, just keep doing it.
Look, that's the thing. I don't think it's completely 100% up to the player. Because the thing is, the way that these microtransactions are implemented, they often incorporate a lot of manipulation. And as human beings, we are susceptible and we are vulnerable to certain types of monetization.
Yeah.
We like lucky packets. We just want to see what's in the box, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you see those guys do this like 100 pack Hearthstone openings. Like, by the time he gets like pack 60 or 70, he's like not even caring that he's getting this legendary or that epic, whatever. It's just like click, open, becomes so monotonous and addictive. It almost becomes like watching those old women at like 7 a.m. at casinos, and you realize, like, you haven't gone to bed yet, have you? You've just been, like, you know, pulling the one-armed bandit all night.
Yeah, I think that the Battle Pass sort of model is going to work quite well with a game like Overwatch, you know, where you jump on for a season, you pay X, and you get rewards along the way. Yeah. It's been working for games like Fortnite. It's been working for games
Dota
like
forever, geez.
Like Dota for the longest time. I think like Dota's managed to really like fly under the radar as far as the loot box stuff goes.
Yeah.
But
it landed before it was an issue. And so then when people made issue of it, you'd be like, oh no, but Dota's been doing it forever. Like, it's almost like it's part of how they raise money for TI. Like,
there's different ways to go about it. You see all the rewards that you can get and you can't get doubles. Like, that makes a huge difference. I even take issue with the loot boxes in Path of Exile because doubles are a thing. I've gotten doubles and it's so annoying. But the way that they get around it is that after 3 months, everything that was in that league's loot boxes go into the store. So if you don't want to like gamble your cash away, you wait 3 months, you can get the item that you want from their store.
Okay.
So that's the way that they kind of skirt around it.
Yeah, I think Dota does it where everything you can then sell afterwards. And you do get doubles on certain things, but you're allowed to like trade them back for levels or for spins on Crystal Maiden's Wheel of Fortune. Going back to BlizzCon, the other thing that was interesting was that Hearthstone, obviously, besides having a new expansion, is also going to enter the auto chess. Or, I don't know what the even genre they're calling, like auto battler, I think they're calling it.
Auto battler.
You know, the genre that you've got League of Legends and you had Dota auto chess and then you got Underlords.
Yeah.
And so now you've got Hearthstone, I think it's called Battlegrounds, is their kind of new battler where you'll have sort of similar eight players all enter, eight enter, one leaves type vibe where you, like randomly. I'll try it because I got reasonably addicted to Underlords.
You're the king of auto chess.
I do enjoy, I never really played auto chess and I certainly never played LOL Tactics, but I will give Hearthstone a try. I used to spend so much time playing that game and then it felt like the constant updates actually crushed it for me because it was like, you'd have to get all the cards and you'd have to grind through and then you'd end up playing people who had bought every single card. So you're like, oh God, I got to spend money too. And yeah, no, it was quite rough. And so I haven't played for about a year and I had played pretty much from vanilla when it came out. So a bit sad. I probably got a reasonable collection of cards that in terms of value are just gathering dust now because they'll get to a new season where they cull all the old cards from what they call standard. So you can still play them in wild, but in standard you can only play the last 2 years worth of cards. So I don't know. A lot of people say that culling actually is a good time to jump back on because everyone will be in a situation where like they've only got last year's cards. They don't have the 2 years before. So yeah, maybe that's the time to jump back on. But interesting that Blizzard are also going, hey, maybe it's not a fad and you know, we missed the Battle Royale fad, so let's try if we can jump onto the auto battler fad.
Yeah, so BlizzCon on a whole, yay, nay?
In the green, but not like full yay. I think it's just like, the thing that puts you in a less than 100% stoked thing is going, that's all the announcements that we expected. If you consider that Blizzard probably was a dirty word given all the Hong Kong stuff, actually reasonably good. Probably the best meme was for me the amount of people, because obviously Blizzard, everyone dresses up, well, a fair contingent dress up for cosplay. I think the most popular cosplay by far was Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, really? Lol.
Which is just
I thought
amazing.
Maybe it would be like cell phones.
No, it was Winnie the Pooh, obviously, because the meme is that the Chinese president looks a little bit like Winnie the Pooh and he hates the reference. So,
and Winnie the Pooh's banned in China.
Yeah, so the amount of people who dressed as Winnie the Pooh at BlizzCon was just amazing. Like, I think some people entered like the amateur cosplay contest as like Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, for me, the biggest takeaway from BlizzCon was actually seeing that like the Diablo department wasn't just like three guys in a water cooler.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like games, something's happening there, man.
Yeah.
You know, they got some stuff, which is dope. You know, they got some games going, which is lacquer. I'm keen.
I think the reason that half these things are the worst kept secrets is that everyone just watches the Blizzard job hiring boards. And that they try and hide what it is, but I think a couple of weeks ago they're like hiring like an entire team of artwork kind of level designers, but they're going, if you have experience in dungeons and you know crypts and that sort of stuff, you're going, how many of your other games do that stuff? So it's like, cool, they're clearly designing Diablo levels, because it's not like suddenly there's going to be a crypt level for Overwatch, or you know, maybe there's new WoW stuff, but you kind of like, let's be honest, if you're that specific with the wording, you're talking about Diablo. But yeah, so there were all sorts of artwork leaks and posts from job boards and that. There were people like, oh, there's a new Diablo. Hey, guys, there's a new Diablo coming. Yeah, we know. But yeah, at least there's something announced, even if it is, like you said, not even Blizzard close.
Not even Blizzard close. What is close is The Witcher.
Yay, coming segue. Out with
20 December. I know, right? I was waiting for a good one.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So me being the asshole nerd that I am, I did like an in-depth analysis frame by frame. I don't know if that works on a podcast. I'll try some of it.
maybe the major call outs.
Yeah, I'll call out some of the good parts. So Witcher trailer dropped, what was it, last week?
Yeah.
Oh, man. They showed so much. I was so hyped. We really get to see what this world's going to shape up to look like. We're getting a couple of the different story beats that we know they're going to touch on in the season. We get to see some of Geralt's personality. And when Henry Cavill drops that line, you know, when Yennefer's speaking to him and she says, you know, Monster Hunter, whatever, I thought you'd have horns or fangs or something. And he's like, I had them filed down. You're like, whoa, this guy's got jokes. Yes, I was very hyped. And it's crazy how much Henry Cavill actually sounds like Doug Cockle without even trying. he's managed to like craft this sort of off British kind of New Zealandish husky South African esque like voice.
It's like that, a fancy could be... pants posh accent, but it's not quite any nationality.
Well, exactly. It's great, and I really dig it. So let's take a look at what came up in the trailer. Some parts that sort of stood out to me. So towards the beginning of the trailer, we have Geralt fighting some Nilfgaardians at Sintra. So Sintra is a big battle that's going to happen at it's a big event in the books, because that's where Ciri gets separated from her family and kind of goes off on her own, and Geralt finds her again later with the Dryads. The Dryads of Brokilon, who we see later on in the trailer. We also get to see a bit of Henry Cavill doing his sword stuff. Cavill did all of his stunts himself, and everyone on set says that he was fantastic. And we get to see a lot of that movement in this trailer, not just his sword play, but also some of his signs work. He casts Ard at a certain point, and it just looks fucking cool. We see Geralt telling jokes. Geralt's arriving at Blaviken wearing a cloak. We're going to get the Butcher of Blaviken storyline. Not 100% sure whether this is going to be a flashback sequence where he's talking to maybe Yennefer or another character and telling her, you know, how he got this title, the Butcher of Blaviken. But we know that there's going to be a big storyline around that and his fights with Renfri. So the whole Blaviken thing is also kind of murky. It was a sorcerer who who'd been killing young girls. He sort of came under the impression that certain women born under specific eclipses were cursed. They had the curse of the Black Sun. And if they were left to grow up, they would cause the destruction of the world or whatever. So he just fucking kills a bunch of young women. And the town basically wants him killed. But Geralt, he kind of gets caught in the middle, because this mob is kind of trying to lynch this guy. But Geralt also wants this guy to face justice, but he isn't really ready to kill him. So in effect, he ends up defending the sorcerer and killing a bunch of the townsfolk. And thus being coined the Butcher of Blaviken. We see him using Ard on Renfri's thugs. And then there's a cool shot of Geralt surrounded by ghouls in a dark forest. Now, this is kind of the only shot of like monsters that we get to see in this trailer. That scene, I think we see later. It's a scene where Ciri and Nilfgaardians are kind of in this forest, and I think that they've sort of captured her trying to escape from Sintra, and then they got attacked, they died. So when Geralt gets there, he's already too late, and it's just corpses and monsters. We get a shot of Geralt making some potions, which looks pretty cool. What else? We see a really cool like long shot of a battle scene, which I assume is the Battle of Monendal. We see Queen Calanthe and the Sintrans fighting the Nilfgaardians during the sack of Sintra. And then we see Ciri with the Dryads of Brokilon. And then we get a Geralt bathtub scene, which is also really, really cool. We get Geralt and Yennefer sort of talking about talking about Witcher feelings, which is also sort of a nod to the short story Shard of Ice, where him and her are having a back and forth. So I really like the styling. I love the color grade. It looks really bright and vivid. I think it's going to be awesome. Very hyped for it. And we got a release date as well. I think it's what, December 20?
Oh, so right around the corner.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And on Netflix?
Yes, on Netflix.
Okay, so you can binge all 13 episodes or whatever in one go.
Yeah, so what I can see is there's a lot of stuff being pulled from the books, some stuff pulled from the games as well. And okay. They're kind of making their own mix of the two. And it's going to be really cool, fantasy epic, monsters, swords, spells, cool shit.
Yeah, to fulfill your Game of Thrones come down.
Yeah, if you got a Game of Thrones come down. What was that? Was there a finale? Fuck, I can't remember.
Yeah, exactly. It just suddenly ended after season 7. That nothing happened. I'm just waiting for that show to end. But so you wonder if there will be any kind of game announcement soon, you know, like a Witcher 4, you know, based on the hype that the show is creating. Or is it also one of those spaces where like, okay, cool, we don't have to do anything for a while because everyone will just be satiated by the show.
Look, I think the two are sort of, I mean, they're unrelated, but we did get...
But they do rely on each other for hype.
Yes, but we did get a bit of a news bite coming out of CD Projekt about a month ago where they confirmed, look, we've got two worlds that we are working with, two franchises, and those are Cyberpunk and The Witcher. So they do have more Witcher projects that
they're sort of in early development.
Yeah, totally. They're in early development, but they obviously, I think those guys are pretty, they're pretty poignant about when they announce things and what they announce because they know that a lot of eyes are on them. And I think they're just trying to keep the focus right now on Cyberpunk.
Yeah. It'd be stupid to do anything else.
I can imagine a couple of years after Cyberpunk is, you know, in the public sphere been happening, it'll be like, ooh, CD Projekt Red are hiring for a new fantasy role-playing game.
I wonder what it could be.
I wonder.
Must have experience with a random card game within a game. I still can't believe Gwent became a full game. Full-on esports, people's careers, everything. I thought it was the worst part of Witcher, but I am definitely in the minority, it seems. Did you play much Gwent in The Witcher?
I played all of the Gwent in Witcher. I got the trophy. I got the achievement. So that's cool. Achievement was tough. It's difficult to keep track of like where all these fucking cards are.
Yeah, running around.
I had a good time.
Collecting cards, yeah.
I played a bit of the standalone game as well.
Yeah.
During beta. I didn't actually switch over when they launched the full game. I played like a bit. But ultimately, I feel like a lot of these card games are very much about like, you know, it can easily become like a money sink because if you get into it and it's like you get good, it's like, well, I need more cards.
Yeah. I spend more money on Hearthstone than probably any game ever, which is saying a lot given I've played Dota for over 10 years. So the last thing I think we can talk about, because as far as I understand, as long as I wait till the 8th to announce this podcast, is we can talk about Death Stranding a bit. Because obviously last time we hinted at it, but because of how very strict they are with the embargoes this year, or at least with this release, they, despite the fact that, let's be honest, you go on Reddit and you could pretty much make up the entire story, like every game mechanic is all out there. So, someone has got a leaky sink somewhere, in terms of, you know, not sticking to embargoes. Sometimes half the time I think with those leaks it's a case of going, look, I really want to put online for Reddit clout, so what I'm going to do is just tell a friend and then they'll put it on and then I can't get in trouble because I didn't really release any of the shit.
You know, so last week we couldn't really chat about it too much in depth. You gave your sort of very vague first impressions. So what can you tell us about your experience of the game sort of at this point?
Okay, cool. So I'm right about chapter 5. And yeah, so essentially you are this guy called like a porter. And it seems that everybody has their like their surname is almost like their job, which is why, you know, at first everyone's mocking the fact that like there's a hard man and a dead man. And it's just because like I think hard man is a he's like the head of security. And then like dead man is like he's the scientist, but dealing in like autopsies and like the death and all that stuff. Oh, it makes sense. And so porter is because what I deliver things. Yes. Okay, cool. It all makes sense. And so essentially what's happened is your character's job is to deliver goods across this sort of wasteland that's been created since some sort of cataclysmic event has happened. What happens is like you're kind of thrown into the middle of the story and all the characters act like they know what's going on, like it's just the life they've been living, but like you don't know how does this happen? What are they talking about when they're using acronyms and all that? When they're saying, oh, the BTs, you're like, what the fuck are they? You know, they just talk about them. Okay. Oh, no, there's a time fall happening. Okay. You said, oh, no, so that must be a bad thing. So let's, what do we do? We go inside. Okay, cool. Like you start to piece it together as it happens to you, as opposed to, you know, like these little prompts going, when a time fall happens, you want to go inside because it's basically acid rain that ages things really quickly. Oh, okay, cool. It's like you just experience it because some guy will like fall in the rain and his hoodie will come off and like some drops will hit his face and you'll see him like rapidly start wrinkling and his wow. hair going white. So like you're really thrown into it. I enjoy that. I know a lot of other people, you know, based on the fact that I've watched movies with these sorts of people, get very frustrated by that because they'll be like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I just want to know like what I have to do from a, not only like a, how would you put it? A foot soldier being told, you know, take this flag to the top of this hill, but also like, because when we put flags on top of the hill, we connect some sort of system. Oh, okay, cool. The greater, you know, the schemes of the gods, as it were, not just like what my, you know, immediate superior officer has told me to do. And I think I think it's supposed to play into A, how futile his existence is, in the sense of like he's just doing a job as simple as like, yeah, deliver this to this point. But like, I guess as he goes on, realizing how big and important the role he has is in the grand scheme of like reconnecting America. So I think that's like the main quest, as it were. It's like you start slowly reconnecting these colonies to this main, you know, to your main hub. And you, in doing so, are trying to like reconnect America because that is seen as like the only way to survive this sort of cataclysmic event that's happened. So some of the weirder stuff that happens is, when someone dies, you have these things like eventually called a void out, which is like this massive nuke-esque explosion. And then these death stranding, which you've probably seen in pictures of them. They're like these floating black wisp ghost type things. And that's probably the most tense part of the game is you have that baby in a bottle sort of thing. It can detect them. So you get people with different, I can't remember the name, I think it's called Dooms, is the ability to like sense or see the Death Stranding. And you've got level 2 or whatever, which means that you can sense them, but you can't see them. And so this baby in a bottle has this like weird, it looks like a mix between like a spinning blade, an umbrella, and a radar kind of all together. And
yeah, I've seen it.
It starts like pulsing when they're close and pulsing fast and faster until it eventually starts spinning. And then eventually it's going like helicopter speed spin when they are really, really close to you. At which point you're like holding your breath and hoping that they kind of float on and miss you. But it's one of those, like if they catch you, then like all of a sudden these like this black pool forms around you and these like tar hands start trying to grab you and pull you under. And when your character, there are a couple of cutscenes, he takes off his shirt, like for a shower or whatever, you see he's got like these hand burn marks on him, which are obviously where he's been grabbed by these BTs. Those moments are crazy intense because every so often they'll happen with like some other bad dudes that you're trying to like fight or whatever, or like, you know, are trying to hunt you for the stuff that you're carrying. And so they're sending out like these flares to detect you. But at the same time, you are using your, you've got this like pulse that like shows where some of the BTs are, but you're really revealing that pulse also reveals where you are to people who have the similar tech. So like you've got this weird mix of like, oh God, I want to get out of this area. So I'm going to use this pulse to see where the BTs are because my baby scanner is going nuts. So I know they're super close. But at the same time, if I do that, then I'm going to reveal myself to these other guys. Can't remember the Hull or whatever, who they're like this other group of scavengers. And so that's the thing. As you get onto the game, you realize like as much as people are stoked for you to reconnect America, there's some people who like, you know, they're keen on being nomads and scavengers and kind of like, you know, different, you know, break off splinter cell kind of groups. So it's in typical Kojima style, it's weird. You start piecing it together. The factions and the other kind of political elements are coming to the fore. But if we talk about gameplay, the closest thing I can refer to it is it's pretty much like a survival. I wouldn't even say full horror. It's got horror moments with like surviving the BTs, but it's definitely like a survival game in the sense that you're very aware of like the durability of your shoes and planning the safest route sometimes is not the fastest. And so you're managing efficiency versus safety. Some of the really cool mechanics are the online. It's like online, offline, similar to like if you played some of the Souls games in an online mode.
Yeah.
So people leave notes. Some of them are trolly as hell. When you see them, you like them and or like you can dismantle them even.
People can leave resources and stuff to you as well. And they can leave bridges and ladders.
So you can do that, which is quite cool. That earns you quite a bit of likes if it's a, you know, if it's a expedites your journey. And likes are kind of like the currency, you know, not that like you use them to buy anything really, but it's just like, it's the kind of your score and you level up and rank up based on the amount of likes that you get. So I don't know if it's him giving a little stab at what the world will become post-apocalypse that, you know, these likes that are we like, you know, basically bending over backwards for, look at my engagement score, bro. You know, yes, man.
That's pretty cool. I wouldn't be surprised if that is like a little bit of Kojima humor, like shining through, because we know he has those moments. I've heard words like walking sim being thrown out there. And from the gameplay that I've seen, it looks like a lot of thought gets put into things like your loadout, the way that you are weighted, the different terrains that you choose to traverse, what you're carrying when you hit those terrains. You know, planning out your journey is as much a part of the game as going and walking it. And I think it's important to realize that this game will not be for everyone. There were some games that came out in the last couple of years, like let's say Red Dead Redemption 2, for instance, which we can easily look back on and say, wow, what a masterpiece. But also, wow, not for everyone.
Very, very fat, like gluttonous a little bit in its time expectations of you. And
But also in a way that like it expects you to just kind of relax it back and take in the world and like just kind of like immerse you in it. You know, there's when it came to Red Dead 2, you know, the act of like, let's say going out on a hunt, setting up your tent, you know, brewing some cocktails or coffee, whatever, like having a nap, having some coffee, you know, carving out, you know, making each little bullet, like just that was a big part of the game, right? Yeah. And it's these like little innocuous sort of world building tasks that make you feel like you're more part of the world than you would be, you know, playing something like an Overwatch, whatever, where you're just kind of like affecting the world. The world affects you in a big way.
To speak to the planning and the walking simulator, you know, if I go, you break down the gameplay and you go, yes, a lot of it is just walking around, taking the scenery, which is, you know, magnificent. Some areas are just really, really breathtaking. But it's a case of going from, if when you're playing the game, you'll know that like a lot of it is the balancing. A lot of it is that you know you're going to take a fast route carrying a lot of goods, and there's this risk that like that's near a highway or like near a high traffic area that there's likely to be some bad dudes, but that at the same time there might also be a lot of people have left kind of ladders and bridges and stuff to make my job easier. I might travel with a lot of construction materials that are going to make my life easier. So I've brought myself climbing ropes and ladders, and I brought myself bridge materials and all that. So it's going to make things easier. But then that's what that's meant is like, I'm not as fast or I fall down easier. Then if you fall and you damage your cargo, when you return it, you don't get nearly enough cash. Sometimes if you return it too damaged, the mission's failed and you got to like do it again. It's definitely balancing the risk reward factor, because you could go, I'm going to take on 5 or 6 missions, take no personal resources, no backup shoes, no ladders, whatever. I'm just going to take goods for pay. And then I get halfway through and I get looted by another group. And it's just, I have nothing, no way of returning. My boots are shoddy. So now I'm bleeding, which is going to attract the BTs because they're attracted to blood. And it's just like, you know what I mean? You're balancing all that stuff in. But yes, from the outside looking in, you're going, all I see from gameplay is this guy walking around and occasionally falling over because he can't keep his balance, you know? So yeah, there's a layer that you don't really see. My one critique thus far is just that the menu system is intimidating AF. Like, you're jumping around menus and sub menus and balancing your loadout and what you want to build and construct and all that. It's, if you are impatient like me and you've skipped a couple of the pop-ups that are like a wall of text to read how different things work, afterwards kind of go, how the fuck do I bring up this or, you know, repair my, I remember there was a message somewhere on how to repair X, you know, how do I do that? It's like, yeah, that's a bit hard, but thoroughly enjoying it. I'm playing it definitely for the storyline. That's the major draw, which, I mean, to be fair, is how most of these adventure games work. You know, the gameplay is a nice repetitive loop that you enjoy doing, but like you're really pushing to see how the story develops. It's getting pretty intriguing at this point. I won't ruin it, mostly because I can't. I think I'm only about halfway through the game. But if you're a Kojima fan, you probably enjoy this. If you're looking for something that's different, you enjoy this. And I think if you're looking for something immersive and slow paced, this would definitely be up.
I feel like it's up my alley. As much as I, you know, have my complaints about Red Dead 2, I did like those moments in between the action where like things feel slower and quieter, because there aren't many games that kind of give you the opportunity to take that in.
Yeah.
And I feel like Death Stranding really, you know, it was always going to be a weird one. Like we knew that from the start. I guess we didn't really know how different it was going to be, but I love that there's this new, fresh sort of gameplay loop that I feel like we haven't really experienced before.
Yeah.
Or at least not in a long time. I mean, I feel like maybe there were games that were similar, like on old kind of like 2D platformer consoles, you know, like Paperboy or, you know.
No, cool. I think people enjoy it, but let's wait to see what the reviewers say. I'm also interested to see if we do get a case of The Emperor's New Clothes, where everyone's like, oh, it's amazing, it's brilliant. And then one note goes like, it's a bit shit. Yeah, it's a bit shit. Yeah, shit. You know, so we wait to hear from the reviews, which I think will all be out on the 8th when the game launches officially. So that's Friday. I'll have to wait. It'll be in the past now because I have to wait for this podcast. Otherwise, again, I'll be a naughty boy. But thanks everyone for listening. We will be back next week with some more Gaming Guru podcast news. If you want to chat to us, I think Twitter is the best way to reach out. I'm at the Gareth Woods, and Tim is at Tim and a Fish. So drop us a line and let us know, hey, if there's something in this podcast that you want to chat about, or if there's anything in the future you'd like to talk about, do let us know. But until next time, peace.
Adios.
The Gaming Guru Podcast. Easily the best gaming podcast in the world. Guru Baby.